You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Heritage Radio Network is sponsored tonight by Fairway Market, like no other market. Welcome to Why We Cook on heritageradionetwork.com. I'm Erica Wides, chef instructor at the Institute of Culinary Education, and you are listening to Why We Cook, which is broadcast live from behind Roberta's Pizzeria in Bushwick, Brooklyn. And I am back from Belize. If you listen to the show regularly, you know that I was in Belize last week. We ran a pre-recorded show last week on greens. I hope you caught that. If you didn't, you can always podcast any of the shows on iTunes now, too, so you can listen to them anytime. So as I was saying, I just got back from Belize on Saturday night, and I was there spending a week at a place called Cotton Tree Lodge. And actually, if you check out the Why We Cook Facebook page, you can actually see that there's a link there also to the Cotton Tree. And the Cotton Tree is in, it's an ecotourism destination lodge, and it's deep in the southern Belizean jungle. It's near a city called Punta Gorda. Well, a town, I guess, called Punta Gorda. And it's a really, really beautiful, really rustic kind of place with cabanas that are built out of rosewood, and they're open on all sides, with screens, of course, for the bugs. But they're open on all sides, so you really feel like you're just sleeping right in the jungle. They're up on stilts, and the sounds and the smells and everything of the jungle just come right in, and it's great for sleeping. And it's a really great place to stay, also because the place is so kind of natural and rustically built, and it's very eco-friendly. They do a lot of recycling. They're totally off the grid. They produce their own power. There's a big organic garden. It's very cool, very green place. And it's on a river called the Moho River, which is about 12 miles from the ocean. And it sits on 100 acres of a former papaya plantation that's now being restored back to jungle, which is great because a lot of land in Central America was, you know, slashed, burned, and planted for crops. And this is gradually being returned back into jungle. And the land is also planted with all kinds of really interesting stuff, like mahogany trees and rosewood. And there's, of course, gigantic cotton tree, hence the name of the lodge. And there's all kinds of fruit trees, too. What I loved about where I stayed, about my cabana, was you could basically lean off the porch and pull oranges right off the tree, which, as someone who grew up in the Northeast, I'm always fascinated by citrus growing right on trees. So I loved that. And there's also all kinds of medicinal plants and edible plants on the property. And, of course, lots of cacao trees, because cacao is a really major crop in tropical countries and especially in Belize. And as we'll talk about a little bit later in the show, the cacao that's grown is, of course, used for making chocolate, but there's also so much more to it than chocolate. And that's kind of the theme of the show tonight, is about cacao and what it's used for and how it's eaten and how it's treated and everything that's involved in turning it into chocolate, but also sort of so much more. And so with me tonight in the studio, I have Jeff Pizzina, who is a co-owner of the Cotton Tree Lodge. And he's also the founder and creator of Cotton Tree Chocolate, which is a line of organic fair trade chocolate that is grown and produced from cacao grown in the Toledo district of Belize. And Jeff is on the show tonight, and we'll be talking with him in the second and third segments about cacao and chocolate and how the two of them kind of find this marriage at the Cotton Tree Lodge and how he got involved in all of that and everything. So tonight's show is about cacao, or as they call it in Belize, Madre Cacao. So if you're not even familiar with what cacao is, maybe you know the word cocoa, but not cacao. It's, you know, basically the same thing. Cocoa is a product that comes from cacao, but cacao is this big pod that comes from a tree called the cacao tree. And it's native to all the tropical regions of the Americas. It kind of grows within 20 degrees north and south of the equator and not much further north or south than that. It really likes the hot and humid. And from what researchers can tell, it seems to have originated in the Amazon and then was spread by humans into Central and Mesoamerica, which is where it's grown. And it's a really, really kind of ancient crop, and people have been cultivating it and using it for a really, really long time. And if you've never seen it, it's pretty cool looking stuff. The fruit, which is what people are interested in is inside of this big pod. And the pods are about, they're anywhere from 6 to 12 inches long, and they almost kind of look like big papayas, but they're sort of ridged and much harder shelled. And they're about 4 inches wide, and they ripen from yellow to orange, and they can weigh about a pound when they're ripe. And when you crack one open, inside you find these little kind of white pulpy covered beans or seeds, and they're like between 20 to 50 inside of a pod, and they're covered in this white fruity pulp. And the pulp is good. You can just pull out the seeds and kind of chew on them, and they're juicy and sweet, and they're a really nice fruit. But inside of that is this kind of crunchy, dark brown bean or seed. And if you bite into that and you don't know what you're getting yourself into, they're pretty bitter. It's some pretty intensely bitter stuff. If you like bitter flavors, they're great. I like bitter flavors a lot, so I just crunched right into them. But people can find them a little bit off-putting. They don't really taste anything like chocolate at first, and you sort of don't even know if you know that there's this real connection until you learn about them. But once those beans have been magically transformed through fermentation and roasting and maybe a little bit of sugar, that's when the magic of cacao happens, that it goes from this hard-shelled pod thing with these pulpy seeds that you would never guess had any sort of connection to a finished product of chocolate. But the cacao pod also is important nutritionally in that part of the world. It's been a big food crop for thousands of years because those little beans are super rich, nutritious, like little energy bombs. They're really high in fat. They're about 40 to 50% fat in the form of cocoa butter. And they also have a really hefty dose of something called theobromine, which is a compound that's in the same family as caffeine. So it gives you this real boost, this like super energy lift. You know, it's like Red Bull before Red Bull. So they can really kind of fuel you up and give you a lot of energy. You have sugar and fat and caffeine all in this one little plant, well, one huge plant. So people have been relying on it as a food source and as an energy source for a really, really long time in the region. And the scientific name for cacao actually is theobroma. And theobroma, which theobromine comes from, means food of the gods, which if you're a chocolate fan, you know, seems very appropriate. And cacao also is really, really high in flavonoids, which are linked to cardiovascular health and increased blood flow. And if you, you know, read on up on nutrition or anything, flavonoids are what's in red wine and beets and all the kind of dark leafy vegetables. They're really high antioxidants and they're really good for you. So, you know, cacao, I think, is really poised to be kind of one of the next superfoods, along with, you know, things like acai and green tea and pomegranate. Those are all also high in flavonoids. And, you know, and it seems to be kind of poised right up there. There's a lot of research and a lot of talk now about chocolate being a superfood, but I think that cacao on its own could be kind of angled in the market that way too. And I also kind of think that chocolate now, you know, we were down in Belize with Jeff and with a couple of other chocolate makers, and there's a really big artisanal chocolate movement going on now. And people are starting to use things like single origin beans for their chocolate. And it strikes me as chocolate being a product that's kind of perched to be where wine was or is about to become, you know, where, not really saying this clearly, but where wine was in the U.S. like in the 80s, I think chocolate is kind of in that place now, where people are really discovering super high quality single origin beans. It's not just about blending 100 million types of beans together or, you know, a whole bunch of different grapes together. It's the same idea of kind of narrowing in on specific flavors and specific qualities. So when we come back in the second segment, there's a cat looking in the window. When we come back in the second segment, we're going to talk to Jeff. I'll introduce Jeff, and we'll talk a lot more about cacao, and then we'll talk about how chocolate's made. So we'll be right back.
Bye.
Heritage Radio Network. Why We Cook is sponsored tonight by Fairway Market. Fairway is like no other market. So welcome back to Why We Cook. I'm Erica Wides, your host. I'm a chef instructor at the Institute of Culinary Education. And if you're a fan of Why We Cook, you can now join us on Facebook. Just go to Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network on Facebook. And you can let me know what you think of the show. Send me questions, comments, become a fan. I would love to hear from you. And you can listen to any show on the Heritage Radio Network anytime, archived on heritageradionetwork.com, or you can podcast them on iTunes. You should also check out a show that airs a little later in the week called The Naturalist. The only reason I'm plugging someone else's show is because it's my father's show, and it's a pretty interesting show. He talks all about natural things in the world. Apparently, last week's show was somewhat X-rated. I can't listen because it's my father, so it's a little embarrassing, but check it out. Let him know what you think, too. Okay, so anyway, tonight we are talking about cacao and chocolate because I was in Belize last week with a friend of mine, Jeff Pizzina, who owns the Cotton Tree Lodge, and that's where I was staying. So Jeff's in the studio tonight, so welcome to Why We Cook, Jeff.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Thanks for making the trek out to Bushwick to be on the show. So Jeff owns this place, or your co-owner, right?
Right.
Co-owner of the Cotton Tree Lodge. And how long have you guys had it?
We've been in business for a little over 3 years and have been on a piece of property that my friend and partner had purchased about 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm. And so originally it was a papaya plantation, right?
Yeah.
Is that what Chris said?
Yeah, there's mangoes and papaya and some other fruit trees that have been on the front 30 of the 100 acres. And actually, the back 70 acres had been and continues to be rainforest.
Uh-huh.
And just some of the papaya has now been turned into cabanas.
Oh, the papaya trees themselves or just plowed down? Because you can't really use it as a wood crop. But anyway, the Cotton Tree is this beautiful place. And it's, like I said in the first segment, kind of this eco-tourism lodge. It's rustic. It's definitely for people who like to be out in the jungle and get a little bit dirty, and we had a great time. And so what's the connection between the cacao and the lodge, and how does that all come together?
Well, when we were initially building the first building on the property, we my partner Chris and I, we were camping on the land and just staying in tents and had been working with some of the local Mayan Indians from one of the villages nearby from Santa Ana. And so as we were directing this project, which was a small project, we would go into town to get supplies. Town is Punta Gorda, a town of about 5,000 people. And there's a farmer's market there a few days a week. And I bought what I thought were a bag of almonds, but it turned out that they were actually a bag of washed cacao seeds.
Mm-hmm.
And compared to fermented cacao seeds, they actually look a little more like almonds.
Yeah,
basically.
They do, right.
So it was an easy mistake to make. And I brought them back, and I really just had a guess as to what to do with them. And since we were camping, I had a iron skillet, had a campfire, had cocoa beans. And I knew that cocoa beans were roasted. And so basically I took some of the beans, roasted them on the skillet, and then took a beer bottle, took a ceramic mug and ground them up, added some condensed milk that we had.
Oh, nice.
Put it back on the stove. And tried to boil off as much of the liquid as I could. And just kind of made something rudimentary, probably a little more like fudge than chocolate.
Yeah, like a ganache. Yeah.
But I actually did mold it in just some plastic container that I had. And had it to pop out. And so it was pretty rough, but it actually worked. And at that point, I decided to look into it a little bit more, figure out how chocolate's really made. And I guess I've been refining the process since then.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you guys source. Okay, so then you guys built the lodge.
Yeah, then we built the lodge.
And then you, as a sort of little sideline, started Cotton Tree Chocolate.
Yeah, basically we are in an area where a lot of the Mayan Indians are the farmers in the area, and they grow cacao, and there is a market for it. And our initial entree into the people and the culture and chocolate came from a woman named Cirilla Cho, who made her own chocolate as a little cottage industry business. And I went over to her house and made chocolate with her in her house. And I was personally just kind of struck by both the process and the accessibility to the culture of the people there. Mm-hmm. And what personally fascinates me about and what I'm interested in pursuing with this business down there is to make that connection between people in different cultures. Mm-hmm. And chocolate is a pretty cross-cultural phenomenon and a good, a good way to get people to relate to each other by participating in an event. So I arranged with her to bring some of our guests over there and to, you know, let them make chocolate with her as a participatory type of thing. And people love it. People, you know, really can, they think what they're coming to the rainforest for is to see the, you know, the animals or, you know, the pretty
the jungle plants in the jungle. Right, the flowers.
But yeah, but people really do make a connection with the people down there, and that's what I found was important.
Well, that's what really struck me during the whole week being there, was I felt like the culture was so accessible, and you guys were so well integrated into it. It wasn't like going to a resort where you're sort of enclosed in this resort, and then you do these sort of like theme parky things. It was like we were really involved and interacting.
Yeah, we try to, a lot of places are exclusive. We try to be inclusive.
Yeah.
Our guests get to know our guides and sometimes go to their families' houses. And,
right.
And they live, some of our employees live and work on site. So you really do get to know the people. Mm-hmm. And they speak English since it used to be a British colony.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's what also makes Belize so accessible to Americans is, you know, there's no language barrier. Yeah. So when you said that you took the guests to her house to make chocolate, are you talking about sort of finished solid product or the drink, the Mayan drink?
She actually initially was doing something more along the fudge lines, and somewhere between that and chocolate, it was more like Tootsie Rolls, basically.
Oh, okay.
And so she did make a solid product, and she also, and you know, makes what the Mayan people tend to consume, which is a beverage.
Yeah.
And there's a few different beverages, and the interesting thing about that is it's when you think of hot chocolate, you think of something that's really full flavored and with a fair amount of sugar.
Right, really rich.
Yeah. But what they drink is not like that at all.
Yeah.
It's very, very thin. It's a tea and it's usually mixed with black pepper.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's mixed with masa, which is like a corn.
Right, to thicken
meal.
It a little bit.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting just to see how different cultures, just even what flavor profiles they're interested
in. Right. Right.
And it's very different.
Yeah. As part of the week that we were there, Jeff has this very good relationship with a local farmer, with Eladio. What's his last name?
Eladio Pop.
Pop. I love the last names there, the Mayan last names. Eladio Pop, who's this incredible farmer who we all went to visit. He has a cacao farm, and he grows a lot of other stuff too, bananas and all kinds of fruit and ginger and turmeric. And he's this amazing, very philosophical kind of guy with 15 kids, and he's a very cool guy. And we went to his house, and everybody got to participate in the process of roasting the beans and grinding and making this beverage that Jeff was just talking about. And it's almost, I mean, it's coffee-like. You know, you roast the beans, you grind them, and you mix them with water, which is, you know, what coffee is. And it has overtones of coffee. I'm surprised that nobody's started trying to serve it or market it here. Because, you know, people love coffee. Coffee is such a huge thing. There's all kinds of, you know, artisanal roasting and kind of niche coffee now. Why do you think no one's doing it?
Actually, some guy approached me like about 6 months ago and was interested in starting up something like that in Boston as a little takeout stand.
Yeah. So. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. You know, like the mud truck here in New York. I mean, that would be a great thing. Although I wonder if people have such a strong association with chocolate as something sweet and creamy that they couldn't necessarily kind of break out of that. But I don't know. I mean, I would buy it. Right. I'd rather drink that in the morning than coffee. You know, so the cacao that's grown in Belize is, you use exclusively cacao from the Toledo district for Cotton Tree, right?
Yeah,
or just from...
We have about 500 of our own trees, but that doesn't handle our demand. So in general, like I'd say about over 80% of it is actually cacao that is grown by people in the area. I mean, you know, some of them are direct neighbors, but, you know, basically in general in the Toledo district, which is the southern fifth of the country.
And there's three, if people probably don't know this, there are three different types of cacao beans grown in the world. There's Criollo and Forastero and Trinitario. Which one are they growing?
They have no clue.
Oh, okay.
Well, the truth of the matter is that historically there were, you know, separate varieties, but
they've all hybridized and cross-pollinated. And so it's just whatever. Because Eladio had what he called like wild.
Local or hybrid.
And then he had one. It was hard-shelled that he called wild or something. Right. He had two different varieties. And he said they taste different. So nobody knows because they're all totally hybridized.
You can notice some of the flavor characteristics are a little stronger for Criollo or Forastero.
Yeah.
Unless the farms have been completely segregated from other farms and other varieties,
right?
It's difficult to keep them as pure strains.
Keep them pure, right? Yeah. And so when I first met you and we were talking a couple years ago, you were explaining to me about fair trade and how it works, because the cacao that you buy is all fair trade, right? And I was under a completely wrong impression about what that meant. So can you kind of explain what fair trade is?
Sure. I think a lot of people are. I was. It's price protection that where a premium is charged for the product, where the premium goes to a co-op. It does not go to the farmers. So basically what happens if there's a minimum price on the world cocoa market and then a premium above that price for fair trade, that fair trade premium is money paid per pound by the chocolate manufacturer to the co-op for the cocoa beans. And that money stays within the co-op, and the co-op uses it to fund projects that would help the farmers. So like in our area, the projects have been a community drying facility, and also just the physical infrastructure in order to create the market, as well as to get beans to market. Like they have some vehicles, pickup trucks, where they could go to more remote places and help get the beans from the farmers to the market. So, and part of it's just having some organization and creating a market and creating the ability to sell to a larger international customer.
Right. If they sort of band together as a co-op and then they plow. So all that extra profit gets plowed back into the co-op to sort of help them create more infrastructure for themselves.
And where we are actually happens to be the first fair trade organic cocoa co-op in the world.
Wow.
Hmm. And so they've had, some history with us at this point. And They sponsor education for the farmers, and they take care of the organic certification of all the farmers' farms.
Mm-hmm. So who's doing the organic certifying? Which body, do you know?
I think it's called EOC. It's a European organic certification.
Oh, okay. So it's a European group that comes in and certifies.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Because Eladio was talking about a fungus that's been attacking all of his trees, and he's trying to sort of figure out, how to deal with that. And he said it's cut way back on his production this year because of this fungus, because they're growing organically. And then we were talking about that on the way home and how, there are ways to treat funguses on plants organically by using things like chili pepper extracts or tobacco juice or garlic. And then we actually went home and looked it up, and it said that garlic juice is a really good one.
Right.
But I think it would probably affect the flavor of the cacao because it would probably be absorbed into the tree.
It's I don't really know enough about it. It's funny, actually. Yeah. I met a professor at Rutgers who is doing research into how cacao naturally fights disease.
Uh-huh.
And he found that the more naturally disease resistant plants have a lot of caffeine in their leaves.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. And so he was treating different plants by spraying them with different kinds of acids in order to elicit the protective mechanism of putting caffeine out into the plant.
Huh.
And I know, I can't really recall the details, but I know that ultimately he ended up playing around with injecting acid into the cocoa beans themselves and then growing trees that were naturally disease resistant.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's cool. Because Eladio had mentioned that, he grows allspice trees in between his cacao trees because the allspice flavors the cacao. So then I was thinking, if you're going to spray garlic on your plants, then it would probably flavor your cacao, and you don't want that. It's not very desirable to have garlic flavoring in your chocolate.
Right.
Yeah. You know what else has a lot of caffeine is I'm thinking nicotine. Eggplant. Did you know eggplant was high in nicotine?
Oh, really?
Yeah. Isn't that weird?
Yeah,
I know. Okay, anyway, so we need to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're actually going to talk about the whole process of bean to bar and how chocolate's made. So we'll be right back on Why We Cook. Yeah. Yeah. Someone that I met, I hardly knew.
He said that everyone loves a defective art. He parted ways with diction. This was late last night. He see me getting your affection, and it proved it was right. The way I stare off the vacant light always sound. Anyone I knew, they would have called me found. Legs, you can kick me downstairs. I'll be there, ain't no getting over Joni Helmet. Just let me walk away. Let me walk away. And let me play tonight. It's in my face now.
Why We Cook is sponsored tonight by Fairway Market. Fairway like no other market. Welcome back to Why We Cook on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I'm Erica Weitz, your host, and we are broadcasting live from behind Roberta's Pizzeria in Bushwick on this nice, cool November night. And in the studio with me tonight is Jeff Pizzina, who is the co-owner of the Cotton Tree Lodge in Belize. You can check out their website, CottonTreeLodge.com, and see some beautiful pictures and find out a little bit more about that. And Jeff is also a chocolate maker, and he makes his chocolate from cacao grown in Belize. And I actually met Jeff through some chocolate related event, I think a few years ago. Maybe it was the
chocolate show, I think.
Was it the Chocolate Manufacturers Association lunch at ICE, right?
Yep.
So I, you know, teach it at ICE, and there was this group, the Chocolate Manufacturers Association, which I guess doesn't exist anymore. I think they've disbanded or something.
Oh, really?
But they were doing these lunches, and I was asked to create the menu for them where there was chocolate in every course. And I think you came to that and introduced yourself, because right. It was right around when you were opening the lodge. And then you got in touch with me like a year or so later, because Jeff teaches these chocolate making from bean to bar classes at his apartment. So I went and I took one of those, and it was really, really fun and really interesting. So if you're interested in doing one of those, people can reach you by email.
Sure.
At Jeff at Cotton Tree Lodge?
Yeah.
Okay. So if you want to do those classes, they're super fun. Anyway, so what I thought we would talk about in this segment is like how chocolate's actually made. Because you guys do the whole thing from bean to bar, and you know, you're right there where the beans are grown. So you want to kind of take us through step by step?
Sure. The fruit's super sweet and super tart. Again, it's a pod that's got between like 20 and 50 seeds in it that are all covered with this fleshy fruit. Suck on it, it's like tastes somewhere between maybe a peach and a mango. It doesn't taste anything like chocolate.
No, nothing.
Yeah. But you crack open the pods, you scoop out the seeds, and you get enough of them to gather like a few hundred, and you pile all the seeds in a big heap, and you naturally spontaneously ferment them just in the open air. And so it's yeast and bacteria that infects the cacao, and the whole pile heats up, and you turn the pile a couple times a day every day for 6 or 7 days.
Is it covered, or is it just out in
the
air?
It's usually a little bit covered just to keep the bugs away. Mm-hmm. But
like with banana leaves?
Yeah, just banana leaves. Yeah, or we are using Waha leaves. But after that week, that pile will have, like, within about a day, the seeds will have increased in temperature up to, like, about 115 to 125 degrees. Mm-hmm. And the cacao seeds are no longer viable, and I guess technically that's about the time that you'd start calling it cocoa beans instead of cacao seeds. It's when it's no longer a viable plant.
So it kind of sterilizes them, right?
Yeah. And it also breaks down, there are enzymes that are generated in the process that help break down the internal structure within the cells. And also you introduce an environment, you change basically the pH changes with the introduction of acetic and lactic acid.
Mm-hmm.
And just physically and chemically, the beans break down a little bit and really introduce a lot of the flavor compounds that ultimately get refined into the finished chocolate. And you can start noticing the flavor development at that point. And after the week or so of fermentation, the beans are spread out, usually dried by the sun, and just gathered when, you know, put them on a tarp, put them on a concrete pad,
right.
Starts raining, gather up the tarp. And usually about a week or so, they've dried out sufficiently. And the drying is actually very important, too, just because you're trying to slowly wick away the acids from the center of the bean to get them out.
Mm.
And if they dry too fast, then they don't.
Hmm.
And after the week of drying, the beans are then stored, and they're just stored in a way so that they're just not completely enclosed and separated from air, so that there's just some air circulation so they don't get moldy. And they can be stored that way for a fairly long time. And what a chocolate manufacturer will do, we have to take the beans and roast them. And they're roasted similar to how coffee is roasted, usually in drum roasters, although it's a shorter period of time and a lower temperature. The inside of the bean gets up to about like 265 degrees.
Uh-huh.
And it's a short roast, like 20 minutes.
So people who are claiming that they're selling raw chocolate.
Well, I mean, they may.
They may not roast.
Yeah, they may not roast.
Right. But in the fermentation process,
but even
it's
in
getting
the fermentation
hot,
process,
it's getting above 118. So,
yeah. So that's a little iffy. I mean, you could actually wash the fruit off of the seeds and make chocolate from that. Although the flavor profile is significantly different.
Yeah.
The texture is significantly different.
Yeah, because we tasted some that was roasted, fermented, and roasted unfermented, and there's no acidity in the unfermented at all. And you don't realize how acidic chocolate is, really, until you taste it like that. Yeah.
And so after the roasting, the cocoa beans are milled, and they're just basically roughly broken up into pieces to help break off the shell.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like peanuts. There's that little paper-thin shell on it. And then they're winnowed, which means they're thrown up and thrashed in the air if it's done a traditional way or using a fan, if it's done in some kind of manufacturing process or a vacuum. And the broken pieces without the shell you call nibs. The nibs are then pulverized into a paste. That paste is then refined with sugar. And for dark chocolate, it could just be the paste from the nibs, which is referred to as cocoa liquor or cocoa mass, plus the sugar. And it's just crushed and further refined in a machine called a conch. And that process can go on from like anywhere from 6 hours to 72 hours. And part of that is to refine the sugar, make the particle size so small that you can't discern any texture. So it feels like a smooth liquid in your mouth. And part of it is just to help get rid of additional acidity from the fermentation. So time actually helps.
Right, it sort of off gases, right? You lose the volatiles, go out,
And then after that point, it's tempered, which means you control the temperature as it's being cooled, so that you favor the formation of a certain size and shape crystal, so the crystal's packed tight, and the chocolate has a higher melting point, and it snaps firmly.
Right, and it's shiny.
And it's shiny. Yeah. And then
it's a great mouthfeel.
Packaged and ready to eat.
And that's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a pretty complicated process. The chocolate that we eat today really is only because of inventions from the Industrial Revolution, like the concher, and also the widespread production of sugar, because before the availability of loads and loads of sugar, nobody ever could do that. You couldn't make it.
Yeah, I don't really know a lot about the history of chocolate, but definitely as ingredients got cheaper and basically what came over from the New World back to
Europe,
Spain and England.
And Holland.
Yeah. At the time, of Montezuma, around then.
Yeah.
Is really when chocolate started to spread through Europe.
Right. Because, before sugar wasn't really widely grown until colonization of the New World. And then it became cheap enough that it could become this mass produced thing.
Right.
Right. And the concher sort of came out of that. Well, unfortunately, we have run out of time. I could sit here and talk about it all night. I'm sure you could too. But, if people want any more information on this, they can check out cottontreelodge.com, see what the place looks like. If you want to learn how to make chocolate, you should get in touch with Jeff. And unfortunately, we are all out of time. So thank you for coming out to Bushwick tonight and being on the show.
My pleasure.
Good to have you out here. And we'll see you next week on Why We Cook. Have a good night.